Jerking out the rotary clip, Ryan stuffed it into a pocket and shoved in a spare. He had plenty of ammo, but only four more of the loaded rotary clips.
That did it. See? It's turning back.
Checking through the scope, Ryan saw that the sticky had stopped and was looking around, clearly afraid to go in any direction out of fear the glass would erupt again. Taking a chance, Ryan aimed at the sticky's shoulder, then moved down its arm, waiting for the inhuman hand to come into the crossfire. Holding his breath, Ryan moved the crosshair along the mottled flesh, past the elbow, to the wrist, and then he fired. 500 yards away, the wooden torch exploded into splinters and went flying out of the sticky's grip. Hugging the limb, the mutie instantly turned to race along the roof toward the nearest part of the wall.
Eastern wall, about 100 yards from the gate. We got our stalking horse.
Swiftly exiting the citadel, Ryan and Christy found a Sekhman waiting for them with a pair of saddled horses. Vaulting onto the animals, the two companions took off at a full gallop through the bill and soon reached the front gate. 50 armed Sekhmen were waiting there, the metro poised at the barrier, black smoke blowing out the tailpipes. Ryan reined in his mount.
East by southeast!
About 100 yards along the wall if the mutie runs straight.
Open those gates!
O'Connor nudged his horse in the rump with his boot heels. The Winchester was tucked into a holster attached to the saddle. Bags full of Molotovs draped behind the one-armed baron. As the gate lumbered open, Gil turned on the headlights of the metro, flooding the area with white light.
Turn those off! We want to track this fucker, not make it run away to the mountains!
Instantly, the headlights winked out, and darkness returned. Gil got the war wag rolling and proceeded through the gate, radiating noise and fumes. In loose formation, the baron and his Sekhmen followed close behind, the companions bringing up the rear.
Jack should take the lead, Baron. There's no better tracker.
The man could follow piss in the ocean.
Holding the reins tightly, O'Connor waved his hand in consent. Bending, Jack chucked the reins, and his mount put on a burst of speed as it moved in front of the ponderous metro. The albino teen had gotten the best of the horses, a young Palomino mare, bridle-wise and strong. The beast was well-trained, and he felt himself starting to match her movements with his own body. As the mare galloped along the bottom of the wall, Jack strained to detect any sign of the escaping mutie. He didn't have to try very hard for long. The horseback riders were doing a sweeping arch around the ville to reach the eastern point of the perimeter, while the sticky was running pretty much in a straight line. That gave the advantage to the mutie. But the horses were a hell of a lot faster, and Jack actually saw the sticky run down the side of the wall and charge across the shatter zone toward the ruins.
Onside.
Jack remembered the word from when the companions had once jumped to Japan. Hell of a place, but sheer heaven for any blade man. Jack carefully slowed his horse to a trot on the sandy street of the pre-dark city. He didn't want to get too close, or the sticky would attack, but he didn't want to fall behind and lose the mutie either. This was a razor walk. One wrong move and the blood would flow. Thunder rumbled overhead as Jack scanned the street with a sinking feeling that the mutie had somehow given him the slip. Then, an inhuman footprint in the sand made him turn down a side street, and a moist handprint on a brick wall sent him along a dark alleyway. Squinting to see in the midnight shadows, the albino teen drew his Colt and eased back the hammer. If the sticky knew it was being trailed, this was a perfect place for an ambush. But Jack knew that he couldn't risk a light of any kind. Sound and smell, that was all he had to go on for the moment. Unfortunately, the approaching storm was covering the sound of suckered feet running, and the faint smell of a chemstorm was masking the rank body odor of the unwashed sticky. Suddenly, a flash of lightning split the night, and the teen saw a flicker of movement on a rooftop, hand and footprints dotted along the side of the stucco wall. It had taken to the rooftops. Having no choice, Jack kicked the mare into a gallop and circled the crumbling pre-dark store. He reached the other side of the building just in time to see the leg of the racing sticky vanish around a corner. That was when Jack noticed the street was clear of sand. Instantly, the teen reined in his mount. The hooves of his horse would sound like blaster shots on the hard pavement. Having no choice, Jack then slipped out of the saddle and proceeded as quickly as possible on foot. Now with both hands free, Jack holstered the Colt and swung up the MP5 rapid fire. If things went to hell, he wanted to kill the mutie as fast as possible, and from a distance. One swipe of the creature's hands could remove Jack's face. Only then did he remember the bandage on his scalp. Could the mutie smell the dried blood? Did it know he was near? Jack had to remember that these were smart stickies. All of the years killing stoop muties were working against him. A fluttering piece of thread on a splintery wooden fence told of the Sticky's passage. Warily peeking over the top, Jack saw the thing standing in the middle of an open field, piled with mounds of rubble. Poised motionless, the Sticky just stood there, seeming to be waiting for something. Maybe another Sticky? Then thunder rolled in the sky, and it darted into a dark alcove to vanish from sight. Easing his stance, Jack fought back a grin. Smart, but not smart enough. Climbing over the fence, the teen crept across the slippery rubble, his heart pounding louder than the building tempest above. Reaching the alcove, he found it oddly blocked by a closed wooden door. But he had seen the Sticky. This had to be it. The nest. There was no other possible explanation for the muty going to the trouble of waiting for thunder to mask the sound of the closing door. Staying low to the ground, Jack moved into the middle of the nearest intersection and impatiently waited for the rest of the segment to arrive. A few minutes later, the hulking metro rumbled into view, filling the street with its imposing bulk and noise. Close behind, Sterling appeared, leading the small army, along with the Palomino mayor. He offered the bridle.
Lose something?
Don't need. Found a nest.
Where?
As Jack quickly explained, all of the segmen got their blasters out and started to check loads for the assault. From the top of the metro, there came the sound of pulleys hauling the wooden arm of the catapult, the plastic milk box at the end jammed full of Molotovs. Sec Lieutenant Chang studied the nondescript building.
Hell's fucking bells. No wonder we could never find them. We kept looking for rad pits and blast craters, some kind of covered hole in the ground, when the bastards were hiding in plain sight.
Another sec man tightened the grip on his crossbow. The arrow, or rather the quarrel, was tipped with a barbed head, the kind used to catch fish. Once it went into a Sticky, there would be no way the muty could get it out without ripping itself apart in the attempt.
Mighty clever for muties.
Ah, nothing clever about them. Just a bunch of feeb Stickies. Dumber than shit.
Sterling took a butane lighter from a shirt pocket.
Okay. Let's burn the place down.
Sorry, but we can't do that just yet.
Pulling out a Molotov, the sec chief paused in the act of flicking the lighter alive.
And why not?
Because we don't know if they're all in there.
Christie looked up at the old dilapidated building. It was just a half-fallen-down ruin located among many others, indistinguishable from the rest. That fact didn't make her feel any easier. According to Mildred, non-muty spiders built traps to capture their food alive, as did monkeys and some lizards, snakes, birds. There were a lot of animals besides man that knew how to hide and ensnare their enemies. And this had all of the earmarks of a trap.
You mean there could be several nests? That's a hellish notion.
Caulfield slid off his mount to lash the mare to the bumper of a pre-dark car wreck.
The windows are wide. We could smash those open, but then they'd know we were coming and escape out the back door.
Back door? Just how smart do you think these nuking things are?
Smart enough to know which building is the armory and try to set it on fire. Too damn bastard smart, that's how smart.
Dark Knight, this is like facing Ka all over again.
Ka? The king of the muties? But that's just a legend, a tall tale to frighten the littles. No muty ever raised an army to fight norms.
Oh yes, he most certainly did. We were there. We saw it all.
So you think this Ka is back?
No. Ka's gone forever.
Okay, so he had a son, or brothers, or whatever made Ka smart is happening again.
Evolution. Life finds a way.
So what's the plan?
Got no choice.
Ryan lifted the saddlebags and draped them over his shoulder.
We have to know if this is the entrance to the nest, one of several nests, or even if the muties are there at all.
Yeah? And how you gonna do that?
How? That's simple.
He turned to face the old building. The dead white windows seemed to stare back at him like the eyes of a corpse.
We go inside and find out.
Silence engulfed the sandy street. Even the storm seemed to be holding its breath.
We go into the nest?
Exactly. But we can't take everybody.
The Baron grabbed the saddle horn and lowered himself to the ground.
We might as well shoot off fireworks first if we do that.
My companions travel together.
I expected no less. You'd make a mighty good baron, Ryan.
Ryan shrugged off the comment.
Well, frag that shit. No offense, but I'm not letting my baron go into a nest of stickies with only outlanders for companions.
Didn't think you would. I'll take along six men as well.
Lucky 13. There's an omen for you.
Well, let's get started. Steven, you stay here with the rest of the troops. I'll take your second in command with me. Get ready to give cover fire if we come out running.
What? I'm not one of the six? Well, no way, sir.
Save it. These things took my arm, and I want to return the favor. Besides, one of us has to stay with the war wag. For the sake of the Ville. Sevi?
You're the Baron, my lord.
Glad you remembered. If I don't come back, then Daniel is in charge.
The Baron clumsily took his own saddlebags full of Molotov cocktails. He couldn't light and throw the firebombs at the same time, but the Baron had a strong feeling that wouldn't be a problem tonight. Death was in the air, thicker and more pungent than any acid rain. It was almost a tangible thing, blanketing the pre-dark ruins. The sec chief said nothing.
Stephen, will you stand by my son?
Yes, I will, my lord. He'll ride the Eagle Throne, and I'll chill anybody who says different.
Stepping closer to the sec chief's horse, the Baron offered his hand, and they shook.
Good enough, old friend. Just watch your six for Caulfield.
He'll be the first man I chill if you don't come back. He wasn't my childhood friend, and I don't know him, Jack.
So I've gathered.
Choosing only the most loyal sec men, Sterling picked six to accompany the Baron. Nervously looking at the pre-dark structure, the troopers climbed off their horses and handed the reins to friends, then proceeded to double-check their hand cannons and long blasters. A few of the sec men exchanged weapons, so that the people going in would have the better blasters. Ryan drew his six hour.
All right, let's move out. I'll take point.
Like hell. I always take the lead.
Ryan patted his gun.
This shoots barely louder than a cough. How about your long blaster?
Leveling the big bore Winchester, the one-armed Baron started to object, but then considered the logic of the man with the silenced blaster going first. He didn't like it, but accepted the hard reality. Damn, O'Connor wanted to do some chilling tonight. It was like a hunger in his belly. Readying their explosives and blasters, the companions started across the street, when a sudden flash of lightning cast the world into stark relief for a single long heartbeat. It made the building strangely resemble a human skull. Then the diffused light faded, and darkness returned.
If you hear explosions...
We'll come running, yes sir.
Good man. See you in hell, Stephen.
Detouring past the field of rubble, Ryan went stealthily by the snowy windows and up a short flight of granite steps to the front door.
I thought the stickies used the side door.
Which is why we're using the front. Now pipe down. This is a wreck, not a fucking gaudy house orgy.
Ryan watched the roof for any unnatural movements. Going to the door, JB quickly checked for any booby traps, but it was clean. He picked at the lock with a couple of steel probes. The rusty tumblers were stubborn, but finally yielded. As the weathered portal swung aside, there came a dry exhalation from the building, carrying the smell of mold, decay, and something else. This was a sharper smell, nasty and unclean. The Baron thumbed off the safety of the Winchester.
Stickies. By gad, this really is their fucking nest.
Pointing at two men to stay and guard the exit, Ryan led the way inside. The dank air was thick enough to chew, and the Norms pulled handkerchiefs over their mouths as if caught in a sandstorm. As the front door closed, candles were lit. In the dancing light, the group could see that the peeling walls were bowed slightly, as if sagging under tremendous weight, or just from sheer age. The terrazzo floor was cracked and stained, and the front desk of the office building was coated with layers of thick cobwebs. Apparently, this had once been an office complex. A directory on the wall listed all of the companies here, a single plastic headstone for the hundreds of people who had once worked here, now long gone. Judiciously, Mildred scanned the list of names, but none of them were familiar. Then again, any of them could have been a covert front for some government agency from her time. Going to the left, Ryan easily located the side door that the sticky had used to enter the building. Jack pointed at the loose sand mixed with the dust on the floor. Multiple tracks overlapped one another. Ryan frowned at that. These weren't enough footprints for a horde of stickies. If this was their nest, it hadn't been here for very long, maybe only a couple of months. Were the stickies moving around in the ruins? Just how smart were these bastard muties? Following the trail, Ryan watched for traps as he slipped through the still building, the accumulated cobwebs covering everything like a blanket of freshly fallen gray snow. The detritus of time lay heavy over the office building, solemn and implacable. As the group of companions and Sekhmen returned to the lobby, Ryan saw marks along the wall where the stickies had gone around the stairs and climbed directly up the wall to the landing on the next level.